Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I actually met my wife on CatholicSingles.com, if you can believe that.
Really?
And about... Yes, I had never done that before. Didn't have any problems with dating.
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content. But you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Good morning and welcome to Simply Holy. I'm your host, Marge Steinhake-Fenlon, and today's episode is part of my Springtime in the Church series, in which I explore the unique and often little-known ways in which laypersons serve the Church. I think this is a desperately needed movement of information. That's what I'm calling it for our present times. And today I'm really excited because I have with me Michael Grork. I have known Michael for, Michael, how long have I known you? many years.
It's been several years. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while. And I'm excited because Michael Grork is going to tell us about his Franciscan spirituality and secular Franciscan. So he's not a priest or brother, but I'm going to let him tell you a little bit about his background because he has a great story. And he could tell it so much better than I. So, Michael, just tell us, give us a little background on yourself.
Okay, Marge. And thank you very much for inviting me to come on and talk about some of my passions. Like you said, I've got a pretty passionate story as well because I left the Catholic Church. I was cradle Catholic, and I left the Catholic Church after being an altar boy back in the 50s and 60s because I was so much smarter than the Catholic Church, and I married in a Protestant church. Sadly, that marriage didn't last, but my marriage to Anna Marie has now worked into 38 years. The interesting way we got back into the church was that we got to a point, we were raising our boys in a Lutheran tradition, and we have three sons, and we felt we weren't being fed. We didn't know where the authority was. We just felt this yearning that there was more, and despite, you know, many a plea with our Lutheran pastor and others, we couldn't find it. So we went on a search, if you will, and that search ended us up in the Catholic Church again. And so much of it was just, I mean, really second nature to me, because the first liturgical event we went to was Stations of the Cross. And as an altar boy, I used to volunteer for Stations of the Cross. I just simply loved it.
That's powerful.
I mean, there are so many details and signal graces that we don't have time to really go into, but it's very moving. Our entire family was Lutheran and Protestant, and so in 2002, we we finally made it back into the Catholic Church, and we were married. Our marriage was convalidated after less than 30 days of a decree of nullity, which our pastor said was the shortest time he has ever seen a decree of nullity get granted. But we made our way into the church officially, and we just started becoming a very active part of our parish. Our boys, of course, thought we were nuts. They thought we had abandoned our Lutheran heritage and so on. But soon they saw just how important this was to us. And so we, in 2006, I was working as a district manager for a photographic company. And I had all kinds of stores all over the place in Washington State, in Idaho, in Oregon. And so I traveled about 50% of the time, but my wife and I still managed to put together a wonderful liturgical life and prayer life together, including the rosary and scripture study and divine mercy and lots of wonderful things. The bottom line to all of this was, when our boys saw how beautiful this was, and I felt that I needed to give back, you know, everyone warned me, you know, be careful what you ask for, including my pastor confessor. It's like, this is fine. I understand you want to give back, but be careful what you ask for. And it took probably another 6 months or so, and I saw an ad in the National Catholic Register for the manager of a Marian Center. And after some investigation and all, I determined what it was, and I showed the ad to my wife, and God bless Anna Marie. She looked at the ad and she said, "What is it?" I told her, and she says, "Have you sent them your resume?" And I said, "Well, no, honey." I'm sure they can't pay me what I'm making now and our lifestyle now and everything else. And she said, "Well, if you don't send them your resume, I will."
That's awesome.
And I got busy sending my resume, dusting it off and sending it in. By the end of that month, which was about really a total of about 2.5 weeks, I was in Milwaukee as the manager of the Marian Center, which is a Catholic book and gift store.
And I've been there, and it is quite amazing. I mean, it's like the place to go. You need anything Catholic, you go to the Marian Center. That's what I hear on the street, so to speak. And it's a great place.
Yes, yes. And so we just changed our lifestyle completely. We went from, you know, really a pretty typical upper middle class, you know, life in a beautiful neighborhood in Vancouver, Washington, to a very simple, pared down life here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And we were the richer for it, quite frankly.
How were your boys with that move? Just curious.
Well, they understood that we had to do this. They didn't know why. Quite frankly, Anna Marie and I didn't know why. but we just felt called to do this. And so we sold the house literally in one day.
Holy cow. Good for you.
Yeah, and it was incredible. And Anna Marie made her way here in May of that year. And then from that point forward, we were residents of Southeast Wisconsin. Well, then everything went along relatively smoothly without a whole bunch of problems. Now, understand at this time that two of our boys, our youngest and our oldest, were, you know, having wonderful lives. Adam was in Vancouver, Washington. He was getting embedded in a career and so forth. And Kevin was very much in a career in the Portland, Oregon area. Our middle son, MJ, we call him, was lost. When I say lost, I had fired him. He had been a salesperson for me, and due to poor performance, after being my top performer for a lengthy period of time, his work suffered, and so I had to fire him, quite frankly. And from there, it was really a downward spiral for him. Why we left Wisconsin, or why we left Washington when we were missing our son, didn't know where he was, is still beyond my comprehension, but we were drawn to Milwaukee. The Blessed Mother, I assume it was her, that small, still voice whispered in my ear, "You belong here." And so we obeyed. We surrendered. And as it turns out, 2 weeks after Anna Marie landed here, we got a phone call from one of our kids. "Do you know how serious it is with MJ?" And as it turns out, we were able to reach him. We were able to get him on a plane. We were able to get him here to Southeast Wisconsin. And he ended up in recovery. And it was miraculous, truly miraculous.
So he had fallen into some serious addiction. Was he addicted to heroin?
He was addicted to heroin. He was being robbed regularly and mugged. He was robbing regularly and mugging. Plus all the other sad things that go along with a life of that type. He was living in his car under an overpass in Portland, Oregon. He was eating out of dumpsters. You can only imagine the ache in my wife's heart.
Yeah.
And when we would go to Mass, the daily Mass, I could feel her just rounding up all of the women saints. She would gather them every morning and say, "Okay, ladies, we've got to get this kid taken care of." And so as it turns out, you know, we miraculously ended up being able to get him here to Wisconsin. That, I feel, was one of the key components of his recovery, because he was no longer in touch with the people who were feeding his habit and everything else.
How did that go, bringing him, if you don't mind me asking, bringing him here with you? Because I know of other parents in the same situation with a child, a grown child who has fallen into addiction. And in those cases, bringing the child home to be with the parents did not go over well. It ended up being, in a sense, worse than more helpful. And, you know, it's not my experience, so I can't speak to what would have been behind that, but you did it, and you did it successfully. So what happened there? How did you make that work? Or how did God make that work for you?
One thing I want to preface these remarks with is there's a certain amount of, if you will, survivor remorse that Anna Marie and I have, because here we have a son who had fallen into this trap of heroin addiction and opioids and all of that and the life that goes with it. And usually there's one of three outcomes. They either recover, they are in jail, or they die. And at the talks that we've given, when we give mornings of reflection and that sort of thing, we always have someone who says, "Why you, and why did my son die? Why is my son in jail?" I mean, and these are difficult questions to answer. Mm-hmm. But we feel that by the grace of God, he was delivered, and that he had a mission, if you will. How we made it work was, I don't want to say it was simple, but when he called us, he just said, he called my cell phone, though it frankly was from that area, and it was going to be disconnected the next day, but it was the only number he could remember.
Wow.
And I answered the phone, and he says, "Well, one detail I have to give, and that is that when we found out how serious it was, we knew it was serious, but we found out how truly, deeply serious it was, Anna Marie was just in complete tears, as was I. We hugged each other, and I said, there's really only one thing we can do from 2,000 miles away, and that's pray. And we got on our knees, and we said a rosary. At the end of the rosary, we were very peaceful. She went to the living room. I was sitting on the bed doing some reading. Literally 2 hours after we finished the rosary, my phone rang. I didn't recognize the number, but it was from the area code in Vancouver, Washington. I answered the phone, and he said, "Dad, this is MJ. Can you get me out of here?"
Wow.
And that's so incredible. we got him here the next day about 8 o'clock in the morning. Actually, we got him to Minneapolis because that was the longest direct flight we could get. Anyhow, we got him here. We got him into a drying out center, basically a week-long rehab. He didn't have insurance. He didn't have money, clearly. We didn't have a whole bunch of money after our move and everything else. And so we didn't know what to do. We ended up at a place called Genesis. I want to give them a prop in Milwaukee. And they did a marvelous job. And once he was released from that, and again, this is a young man who was far away from the church and had been raised Lutheran. I remember that Saturday when I picked him up at Genesis, I brought him home, sat him down in the chair. I looked at him. I said, "Now what?" He says, "I think I want to go to Mass."
Beautiful.
Yeah. So anyhow, our talk also included what the rules were going to be. And, you know, not being super harsh or anything, but I was determined we weren't going to enable him at all. And so I just told him, I said, you know, if you're going to live here, you're going to have a job, you're going to contribute to the household, and, you know, went down pretty standard rules. He agreed to them. He understood. He understood our piety, if you will, our spirituality, Anna Marie and I, and he knew how important it was. He visited the Marian Center several times after that, and he just saw how important all of this was. He understood the importance of a spiritual life and living your life not for yourself. And he continued to go to Mass with us, and the following year he took lessons to join the church, and he was confirmed on Pentecost of 2017. Now, here's the kicker. Driving home from that Mass, it was at St. Francis Borgia up in Cedarburg, I said, "Boy, wasn't that a beautiful Mass?" And he looks over at me and he says, "That's the way I'm going to say Mass when I'm a priest." I just about drove off the road.
That is amazing.
But it truly is, and we are so grateful. But he followed the rules. You know, we touched base often. He asked a lot of questions. He read. We just stayed in constant communication. And I think, quite frankly, he got so humbled by the entire experience that he had gone through in the 3 years prior to that, that he was, quite frankly, ready to obey, if you will, and to follow what needs to be, you know, followed. He got himself a job. He did wonderfully at it. And then about 6 months after he started working his job, he started going to come and see events. He talked to the vocations director in Milwaukee and in Madison, and he went to and then one evening at dinner, he says, "You know, I don't think I went through what I went through in order to be a parish priest. I think I'm supposed to minister to the marginalized, to people who are going through the same thing that I went through." And I said, "You need to talk to the orders then, the Salesians, the Augustinians, the Franciscans, and so forth." So he started going to come and see events, and he just connected immediately with the Capuchin Franciscans here in Milwaukee. And it was beautiful, and 12 years later, he was ordained to the priesthood. Praise God.
That's,
and so
wow.
Now he's Father MJ.
I love your story, but there were other conversions in your family, yes?
Oh my goodness. Yes, our life has been so blessed, and we are so grateful, because when in 2002, when Anna Marie and I converted and reverted, if you will, none of our family was Catholic. None. And so after then this happened with MJ, Adam, our youngest son, he called up one day and he says, "Hey, you know what, Dad?" He says, "I don't think I've got any lifelong friends here in Washington, so I think I'll tool on back to Milwaukee, see what's happening there. How does that sound?" I says, "Fine, you can live with us. We've got a finished basement, no problem." And so he took his time getting back here, and he, within a couple of weeks, had a couple of jobs. And
wow.
Then he saw how important our faith was to us. He, again, a Lutheran kid, started going to Theology on Tap. He met Archbishop Dolan at one of these events, and they closed the place and just had a wonderful conversation. A couple of subsequent meetings, he met a wonderful Catholic girl. And a few months, well, maybe 5-6 months later, they get married.
Wow.
And he converts to Catholicism. Then, now, and this is a very moving story for me, too. Our oldest son, who, I mean, he had been very successfully living in the world, and life was grand, not practicing any particular religion, but he had been raised in the Lutheran church. And when MJ was professing his permanent vows, his perpetual vows, which was in 2014, I believe, July, he and his wife flew out to Milwaukee to be there. Well, as it turns out, during the Mass, he is crying, and I look over at him, and I thought, well, he's very moved and happy for his brother. And then it was a Saturday, so that evening we're going to the vigil Mass at our parish, and he's crying again, but I'm at the other end of the pew, and Brother MJ is right next to him on the other end of the pew. And so before Brother MJ dropped him off where he and his wife were staying, he says, "Hey, walk and talk with me, okay?" And they just started walking down the street, and he says, "What's going on?" And Kevin says, "You know what? I see the joy that Mom and Dad have in their life, and I see the joy that you have in your life. I want some of that."
Oh.
And so we immediately got him into an RCIA program out in the town where he lives, just south of Portland. He and his wife, Tanya, who is just wonderful, and their two girls, their two youngest girls, converted at the next Easter vigil, and it was just marvelous. So the whole family is now Catholic.
That is incredible. And
truly is.
Michael, part of the reason that, well, you know, we have one more leg of the journey, so to speak, to talk about, and that is your time at the Basilica of Holy Hill. So, and I know I'm not pronouncing the full name correctly, but you will, I'm sure, because that's a place that's nationally known, and yeah. You ended up there as in a management position. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Because this is all fitting together into what we're going to lead into next, and that is where you're at as a secular Franciscan. But first, let's hear about Holy Hill.
I'll keep this brief. I know it's getting long. I'm sorry. But, the Basilica and National Shrine of Mary, Help of Christians, just to be official about it. After 7 years of managing the Marian Center, it was time for me to move on. And so I informed the owners of the store that I was going to retire as of the 24th of December in 2015, and not a problem. Well, approximately 2 weeks after that, thinking that I'm going to head off into the sunset and have a very lovely retirement, I get a phone call from the executive director, and I'm invited to come up and have a conversation with him and the prior. And I said, "Well, why do we need to do this?" And he says, "Because I hear that you're the guy to run our gift shop."
Did you say, "Who told you that?"
Exactly. Let me add it. But So I went ahead and agreed to a meeting. We sat down in an office, and Father Michael Berry was there, and Ron Lyon, the executive director at the time. And we had a very lengthy conversation. And I was very clear with them. I said, look, guys, you know, at my age, I'm tired, and I'm not a long-term solution for your need for a gift store manager. And so Father Michael, he says, well, look, you were a district manager for a photo company. You had many, many, many employees who in those 23 stores you directed. So you had to develop people all the time. You developed managers and salespeople and all. I think you could develop a manager for us. I said, yeah, you're a good salesman. So I agreed to a 2-year term there, and the agreement was that I would seek out and find someone to manage the store and be a long-term solution for the store. That really is what's best for the Shrine Gift Shop. And so that's what I agreed to. Well, as it turns out, I was invited to stay as long as I wanted. And I'm very grateful for that, you know, but I came in and I saw what needed to be done from a retailer standpoint. I had a wonderful staff, hired a few more people, and everyone, you know, great morale. Look at our mission. I mean, we're bringing people to Christ. And we had the books, we had the gifts, we had the mementos, we had all this wonderful stuff in order to praise God and lead people to Him and make it a memorable occasion for people to be at Holy Hill. And so I stayed there actually a little over 4 years, and I just retired this past January. And for their kindness and all, I am just eternally grateful. The Carmelites up there are just the most wonderful. All the priests and brothers that they have up there, and I appreciate the fact that they even allowed a Franciscan to run their Carmelite gift store.
That is fantastic. Now, part of the, you know, I really wanted to hear your whole story because there's an important point to this, and that is that when we think about religious orders and becoming a secular member mm-hmm. of an order, at least the comments that my husband and I have gotten are, you know, oh, you must be so holy. You must be so holy. And, you know, they think that we're somehow, you know, let in, you know, we were allowed into this or invited into this because sure. we are already holy. But your story shows that our Lord doesn't look for the perfect people. He takes the imperfect and molds and shapes them, and with the help of his beautiful mother, leads them into something better. And that's what I hope that our listeners will get from this and from thinking about your story, that no matter where you are in your life and how imperfect you are, if you hear that call, the Blessed Mother is going to petition her son, and together they are going to make this possible. They made it possible for you. So tell us about being a Third Order Franciscan, because many people don't even know what that is. They don't even understand what those words mean.
Right, right. Well, Franciscanism is just basically speaking, it is finding our way to Christ, being on pilgrimage to Christ through the footsteps of Francis, if you will. And many people don't even really know Francis and his story and his beautiful spirituality. They very often think of him as a garden ornament. And we know that that's just not true. But as you said, God takes the imperfect and molds them and shapes them. One of the keys all of us have to do is we have to strive for holiness constantly. We have to respond to God's call. We have to hear that small, still voice. We have to, quite frankly, sit and listen. Sometimes just be quiet and listen for the voice of God. We're not perfect. We're all sinners. That's what a church is, as you know, Marge. You've heard it a million times, I'm sure. A church is a hospital for sinners. That's why we have these beautiful sacraments that we are giving. The sacrament of penance. Oh, my goodness. What would we do without that? And then we have the Eucharist and baptism. And I mean, we are so blessed to have our church and that we are led into. We all fall. That's our human condition. That's because of the sin of Adam. We fall, and we see evidence of it every day in our own lives as well as in many other lives. And the key for my wife and I is, I keep saying, love is the answer. Love is the answer. Love is the answer. You know, I must say it, you know, a dozen times every day, because it is. I find myself wandering and wanting to get, you know, a little perturbed about this or watching the news, shame on me, and not liking what I'm seeing. But that does no good. Love is the answer, and complete surrender to the will of God. Hard to do. Now, as far as Franciscanism is concerned, there is the Franciscan priests. That's the first order. There are Franciscan nuns, the Poor Clares, and that's the second order. You have the third order, and the third order is divided into the Brothers and Sisters of Penance, which was the original name of the third order Franciscans, and the what's called TOR, or Third Order Regular, generally Franciscan priests and brothers who are teachers. And the Brothers and Sisters of Penance, as they were called by Francis, were men and women who lived in the world, some married, some not, who wanted to follow Francis's spirituality towards Christ, but they couldn't leave where they were in the world. And so that's how these all became what they became. Now, I want to say right now, Franciscanism is probably the largest order. And I don't say that with pride, but I say that because it's been postulated that even God doesn't know how many Franciscans there are.
this is true.
But now, as far as secular Franciscans, in the United States, there's somewhere in the neighborhood of about 15,000. Worldwide, secular Franciscans, where did I read that? There's something in the neighborhood of 400,000 to 500,000.
Wow.
Of them. The gist of being a secular Franciscan is, just as any spirituality or anything that you want to truly do that's going to lead you to paradise, is you want to study it, you want to understand it, and you want to make sure that it's leading you to God, that it's of God's will. The formation to become a secular Franciscan is generally 2 to 3 years in length. It's not like you say, hey, where do I sign up? Do I pay my annual fee? No, you have to study. It's not something that you just sign on the dotted line. You have to understand Francis. You have to understand his spirituality and so forth. You are a member of fraternal, generally. Right now, my wife and I are not members of a fraternity, only because with our retirement, we're hitting the road. We're going to be traveling a lot. But we are staying in touch with many of our Franciscan brothers and sisters, so we still have a fraternal community charism to it as well.
So can you tell us, first of all,
sure.
In terms of the formation, now,
yeah.
Do you apply to enter formation? How does that work? You know, how do you even, if somebody thinks, you know, wow, you know, okay, so I want to be a secular Franciscan, but I'm assuming from my own experience in with the Schoenstatt movement that it's not that
uh-huh.
easy. You don't just declare, oh, this is what I'm going to be. Was there some kind
right.
of an application, discernment process? What is that like?
Well, anyone who wants to consider being a secular, there is a lengthy period of time where they are called inquirers. And during the inquiry period or the inquirer period of time, they're attending meetings where there are lessons in Franciscan spirituality and what it is and all. And then after that, generally lasts about 8 to 12 months. Then, if quite frankly, the spiritual director and the council determines that you would be a good candidate to go further, then you are allowed to go further in your formation, and then that lasts another year and a half to 2 years in your candidacy before you profess your promises. And the promises taken are poverty, chastity, and obedience.
Okay.
Hard for a lot of people to understand.
Yeah, well, I bet you get this question all the time, because my husband and I do. How in the world do you live chastity in marriage? People gasp.
Right.
I've had people like, you mean you never... And it's like, no, that's not what we're talking about. So can you, before everybody else, you know, all the listeners are gasping, can you explain that?
I don't want anybody gasping on my account. chastity is chastity within your calling. And so I know people who are single. They, quite frankly, don't think that they're going to be getting married. They feel that they're called to the single life, and that's fine. But that being said, chastity within a single life is not having relations with the opposite sex outside of marriage. And married men and women, within their vocation of marriage, simply have to be chaste within the vocation. So can they have relations? Of course they can, but they should be very chaste and modest and practice that, you know, in their marriage.
There you go. Awesome.
I mean, that's really very simplified, but I mean, it's really a pretty simple concept when it comes down to it.
Mm-hmm. So now
obedience.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go ahead, because I think you're going to ask. You're going to probably say what I was going to ask. So.
Oh, okay. Well, the other two, of course, are poverty and obedience. Obedience, of course, very simply is that you obey the church and her doctrine, and the deposit of faith, and the magisterium, of course, the bishops who are in concert with, in fidelity with, the Holy Father. Then as far as poverty is concerned, and this one here is where we really get a lot of questions too. People say, poverty? You mean you have to be like poor? You've got to wear holy clothes? No. You know, you really have to stop and think about what we consider poverty. And poverty is that we try not to practice consumerism, materialism. We just try to live a simple life. If, I mean, I don't have 15 pair of slacks in my closet. I don't have, 40 different shirts. You know, I can get by with a whole lot fewer than that. When we do have to buy, some things, we try to buy the best that we can afford, because then it lasts longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, from a poverty standpoint, we simply buy just what we need and no excess.
Perfect.
And so, it's just Well, that's poverty, really, when it comes down to it. It doesn't mean that you're poor, poor, poor in money. It means that you just simply lead a life that's simple. And the reason we actually ended up as Franciscans, and we started thinking in Franciscanism even before our son became a Franciscan, because we had always, in our marriage, lived a very simple life. And it just seemed natural when it was introduced to us here in Southeast Wisconsin. We learned about it, and it's like, wow, that's a beautiful spirituality that we could hang our hat on. Let's find out a little bit more about this. And clearly it was a fit.
How is that structured now? So you talked about a fraternity, and so do you have meetings? Do you have retreats? Are there certain things that are required that you participate in? What is the structure like?
Well, the structure is one of the important things is fraternal life, because the community is so important. Francis, of course, had his community of brothers. And so the fraternal life is very, very important. They meet once a month at the local one that is here is at the Basilica of St. Joseph. There are other activities that they partake in, prayerful activities, Franciscans for Life. They go to marches. They pray across the street from the abortion clinic. They just take part in anything they possibly can. They serve the poor at St. Ben's community meal once a month. They volunteer at the House of Peace, where they have their clothes closet and other activities. So, yeah, the true charism is to understand. I mean, we can just simplify everything right down to A, live the gospel. Mm-hmm. That's what Francis did. That's what he drives us to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you're living the gospel in Francis's footsteps, you have a deep devotion to the Blessed Mother. Francis had an indescribable devotion to Mother Mary. You are being pointed clearly then towards Christ, who leads us to the Father. So all of this is beautiful, prayerful, and wonderful. And then in response to all of that beauty and grace, we give to our brothers and sisters who are the least, if you will. Whatever you do for the least of my brothers, that you do to me. And so you will always find Franciscan friaries in the poorest part of town. The House of Peace is at 17th and Walnut here in Milwaukee. And so you are called, and I got to tell you, Anna Marie and I, we still go to St. Ben's community meal and help any way we can. A few times a month we're on call. If they're running short of volunteers, they just give us a call and we can Zoom down there, and we're happy to. The Franciscans don't live their lives for themselves. You know, my life is not mine to live. My life is to give to others, and that's the way it needs to be understood. And it's driven by the Gospels, and that's the way we strive for holiness.
So would you call yourselves contemplatives in the world?
Wonderful way to put it, yes. Sometimes I think in my reading and our discussions and everything else, we may not be all that contemplative, but we really are. With the rosary, with Lectio Divina, with Liturgy of the Hours, all the tools that Mother Church has given us, we take advantage of them, and we try to be contemplative at home. But then we are called to go into the world and give to our brothers and sisters.
So a bit of a superficial question, but this is something that I've also heard a number of times is do you have to wear anything special? Do you have any kind of habit or dress code or some symbol that you wear of your, you know, that marks you, so to speak, as a Third Order Franciscan?
Absolutely. And I don't think that's superficial at all. I think it's important that anyone who has professed promises, taken vows, have some sort of a habit, if you will. What we do as Third Order Franciscans, secular Franciscans, is we wear a Tau cross. That Tau cross, I mean, is very simple. It's not showy. It's not like wearing a full, you know, habit with a cowl on it and everything else. But this, I'm sitting here hanging on the mic. this towel is the cross that was utilized by Francis and his followers. And so in the Third Order, we wear a towel on the outside of our garb every day. And how wonderful is that when people see it and they respond to it? Mm-hmm. Doesn't happen every single day, but I mean, I've been at check stands, you know, at Walmart, and I've had the checker look and say, "Oh, what a beautiful cross." And my wife, bless her heart, she'll say, "Yes, we're Franciscans. This is the Tau cross. Do you know
there
what a Franciscan
go.
Is?" It opens conversations.
Sure.
And sometimes, you know, people will say, "Are you a priest?" And it's like, no, but I'm a secular Franciscan. I'm in the Franciscan order, if you're familiar with that, but I am in the world. So my wife and I, you know, practice the spirituality of Saint Francis, and it's wonderful how that little habit works out. Excuse my dog.
Oh, no, that's all right. I'm a dog lover, so I'm like, oh, yeah.
A little Franciscan dog.
Well, see, that proves that you are contemplative in the world.
Well, we named him Barnabas because we just got him on the Feast of St. Barnabas. But then in homage to Solanus Casey, whose secular name was Barney, he is called Barnabas, but we call him Barney.
Oh, that's adorable. Well, that was really on cue because, you know, it really shows that you are a normal human being and not, as we spoke about earlier in the show, you know, supernatural person who God chose to do this. Oh. This was a path for you. So, I do. I gotta meet Barney someday. Anyway,
yes,
what I'd like to ask now is,
sure.
You know, the whole gist of my podcast, Simply Holy, is to lead people, encourage people to become more holy. Because we always think of the saints, only the saints are holy. Well, I'm not a saint. I hear people, I've said that for goodness sake. I mean, I've said that I'm not a saint. That's terrible. I shouldn't be saying that because we're all striving for holiness. So how does your Franciscan, how does being a Third Order Franciscan help you strive for holiness?
Well, we just talked about the towel. When I put it on in the morning and I kiss it and I put it over my head, I try to, you know, say a little prayer and pray that it allows me to be an example of the gospel to everyone with whom I come in contact. And really, I think that's one of the things that we have to do is it's not a matter of controlling ourselves as much as it is surrendering to God's will. And if we surrender to God's will, we will do the right thing and we will strive for holiness and understand that everything we do is prayer. and just look at everyone and see Jesus and treat him as we should.
Would you say that your spirituality and the fraternity that you enjoy within that, would you say that it helps keep you on track?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. When you stray, as anyone who has taken several months to go to confession knows, you start examining your conscience and you realize just how much you strayed and how little you prayed and, you know, all these things. Because if you don't pray today, it's more likely you're not going to pray tomorrow and the next day and the next day and so on. Is there a discipline to it? Yeah, there's a discipline to it, but the Holy Spirit is pretty relentless, and it's really a matter of surrender. It's a matter of humility that you need to understand that you're not in control. You're not the one living this life. You are living this life for others and for in order to help get them and yourself to paradise. And it's just so important that you stay on track as much as possible. I would love, Marge, for you to see our recreational vehicle that my wife and I are going to be traveling in starting the end of
I'm jealous.
August. Well,
wait, that's a sin. I'm not jealous. I'm very happy for you.
it's an adventure. It's going to be a wonderful adventure. But on the we still have to come up with a name for what we want on the side of the RV, and we are going to have very prominently displayed on the exterior a San Damiano crucifix.
Way cool.
And again, our idea is we wanted to spur conversation. We wanted to, you know, be a starter type of a thing. We will have a YouTube channel also, so, you know, our friends and family and anyone who cares can kind of follow what we're doing, and everything will be in with Franciscan glasses on.
That is, wait, I cannot wait. So do you have, okay, so is the YouTube channel set up yet that people could go to it? And,
no.
Okay.
Not yet.
All right. Do you?
I'll announce it on my Facebook.
Okay. So if they look up Michael Grork on Facebook.
Yes.
They can tie into your journey and follow along with it digitally.
Yeah. Chances are the Facebook page won't be set up until, I'm thinking, later in July.
Okay. All right. Well, I will make sure that I announce that on my author page, my Facebook author page,
okay,
and let people know. And
could be
that,
fun.
That's, yeah, that would be very cool. Michael, I have so appreciated listening to your story and your journey. I know my listeners have appreciated it too. You have so much to share, and you have given us such a great example of God taking normal people, you know, I mean, very normal people with their own difficulties and ups and downs of life, and taking them and showing them that there's something better in store for them. There's something to strive for. And I think you and
Absolutely.
Anna Maria, yeah, I think you found that in the Third Order Franciscans, yes?
Yes, oh, most definitely. As I mentioned earlier, we, throughout our marriage, were really practicing a Franciscan lifestyle from a simplicity standpoint all along. And, of course, we were believers in Jesus Christ and the beauty of the resurrection and all as Lutherans. But when we moved to Wisconsin and we became aware of the Third Order, the secular Franciscans, we looked at each other and said, this is perfect. You know, we're looking for a way to connect with more people and practice this spirituality. And so we became inquirers. And it's just a beautiful thing because we all need people. Let's face it. We are made to be with each other. And so to have a fraternity with all their warts and everything is still a beautiful thing to be able to practice. People who keep you accountable and keep you on track and help drive you towards holiness.
That is, oh, I'm all excited. I wish I could join two different orders at the same time. That's how God keeps me on track. You know, you already made a promise to this one. You're staying right where you are, sweetie.
Well, and that's the thing too, Marge. As you know, not everybody is called to be a secular Carmelite. Not everybody is called to be an associate with the Schoenstatt movement. Not everyone is called to be, you know, a third order Franciscan or mm-hmm. Jesuit or any of the others. They all have different focuses, different ways that they practice their spirituality. It's like 10 different highways that are taking us into this one goal, and that goal is to be with God forever in heaven eternally.
That is, and highway, you know, you and I cannot wait to follow your journeys. I will definitely post that on my Facebook page.
That.
You bet, and I'll be following along, and I want to thank my listeners for joining us today for this episode of Simply Holy. You know, it's been a joy to speak with you, Michael, and to show just another amazing facet of our beautiful Catholic Church. Before we go, I want to ask you, my listeners, please share this podcast with the people in your life. In that way, you can help to lead the world to Christ through Mary. That's what we're all about. And if you'd like to know more about me, invite me to speak at your parish, retreat, or conference, please visit my website, margefenelon.com. Very easy to find, margefenelon.com. You'll also find my blog and bookstore, my podcasts and videos, and how to follow me on social media there at margefenelon.com. Until soon, let's remember that the only thing keeping us from becoming holy is the excuse we make for not pursuing it. God bless you.
Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/breadboxmedia. Experience coffee like never before.